This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
There's certainly never been an election in which email has played such a huge role, possibly even a decisive role. As if Hillary Clinton's private server weren't enough, there was the stuff on Anthony Weiner's laptop, which the FBI is now looking at, and there was the hack of the DNC, allegedly by the Russians, which fueled the idea of a rigged election. And there's the John Podesta email archive, which WikiLeaks has been releasing bit by bit, seemingly calculated to smear Hillary Clinton until the very end. Some of those emails were legally obtained in investigations. Some were leaked, and some were outright hacked, most likely by a foreign government. And that raises questions that journalists struggle with, or ought to struggle with. And to unpack it all, we called in Steve Coll, a contributor to The New Yorker. Steve was managing editor of The Washington Post, and he's dean of the journalism school at Columbia University. He sat down with the editor of NewYorker.com, our own Nick Thompson.
Let's talk, Steve, about it personally for you. You know, I used to be your editor here at The New Yorker. The last piece I worked on with you was a profile of Mullah Omar.
He did not comment for that story.
Nor did we get his emails. Why don't you tell me the story of some moment where you had a complicated choice to face about whether to cover something, how to handle a document that may or may not have been stolen.
In my life as a reporter, I've never come across stolen goods in some raw sense. I mean, I've certainly come across classified information that I know the government would regard as stolen, but which I regard as normal journalistic source material. But when we use this phrase, stolen documents, in reference to journalistic source material, I think we have to be really careful because first we have to recognize that a lot of legitimate source material, say the scenario of an insider or a whistleblower providing you a document that they think the public needs to know about, that material is often referred to by critics of the press as stolen goods. And the criminalization of journalism is something that journalists have to be very wary about stepping into. And yet, there clearly are some materials that are acquired by pure theft. And now, of course, as we'll move on to talk about, you have states, North Korea, Russia, others going around and deliberately stealing materials.
So separating out whether they're newsworthy or not, what is it about the stolen goods that you object to?
Well, first of all, the law. I think you have to consider your public interest function, your ethical standards and decision making, and your legal risk all together. And if you get one wrong, you can put your publication in jeopardy. Just ask Gawker about that. You can make a bad ethical decision and manage the legal risk poorly and be out of business.
So, Steve, when I hear that phrase, legal risk, it makes me think of something we're always supposed to do, which is call the lawyer when something like this comes up. So let me call our lawyer, Fabio Bertoni. He's the New Yorker's lawyer, and he's who we call whenever there's a complicated legal question or a question about documents or ethical issues like this. So let's ring him.
Hello?
Fabio?
Yep.
Hey, it's Nick. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm here with Steve Coll, and we are talking about the legality and ethics of reporting on stolen documents.
Mm-hmm.
What are journalists allowed to do when a document comes to them that's clearly stolen, and what are the restrictions?
Well, under the Supreme Court decision from 2001, Barnicki, journalists are allowed to report on documents even if they're stolen documents. In fact, journalists rely on documents that are leaked to them all the time. There's no prohibition on receiving stolen documents or hacked documents. You know, reporters are not allowed to break the law themselves, so journalists can't trespass or hack. But if they receive hacked documents, they can report on them.
What about inducing people? Can I go on Twitter and say, hey, I'm looking for X, Y, or Z. Please send them to me if I know that X, Y, or Z are likely to be stolen?
I mean, sure. Every newspaper in the country wants Donald Trump's tax returns, for example. But that's distinct from participating in an actual illegal act of theft.
All right. Thank you very much, Fabio. It's always great to talk to you. I love the clarity of your advice.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Steve, so really, as Fabio explains, there are not a lot of legal problems with publishing stolen documents. But before we called him up, you were expressing a lot of concern as somebody who ran the Washington Post newsroom about documents of a stolen provenance. So let's talk specifically about the big one in the news. WikiLeaks has been publishing years and years of John Podesta's emails. I think they plan on publishing 50,000. They're sending them out every day as we approach the election. It seems, and American intelligence agencies have reported, and most people who are experts in the subject believe, that what's happened is the Russians hacked into John Podesta's email account with a specific agenda of influencing the election to favor Donald Trump and, more generally, to sow chaos in the American democratic process. It sounds like, from your previous answer, you wouldn't want to publish stories on this.
No. There are ethical and professional considerations, not legal considerations, as we've clarified. You say it seems. Many people believe intelligence agencies anonymously have reported that the Russians hacked these. We don't, in fact, know this for a fact. Where did the emails come from? WikiLeaks published them. So unless you can look behind WikiLeaks to determine with exactitude where these materials came from, I think you have to be careful about making your news judgment on the basis of an appearance that the Russians did this. And so your decision-making is really about scrutinizing WikiLeaks. Do you feel that they've been transparent enough about where this material came from? Do you feel that you understand that they are motivated in the public interest? Do you accept them as a journalistic exchange? I would tend with caution to accept all of that and to look at their materials on a news judgment basis. But, you know, you're responsible for your own compact with your audience about judgment of this sort.
What WikiLeaks did is it dumped everything online, which is different from the way that Edward Snowden took his documents, where he gave them to Glenn Greenwald. They carefully scrutinized them. Do you think WikiLeaks is to blame in part for the way they handled this? For example, there's a bit in Podesta emails about a staffer for the Clinton Foundation about her near suicide, right? Something that really, really shouldn't be out there. Do you blame WikiLeaks in part for how it was published?
Yeah, I think they're responsible and accountable for the decision to dump everything. You know, I come from a tradition and still believe in the value of filtering. I do think that it is indefensible to publish private information about people who are not public figures that involves their medical condition, their psychological condition, or that puts them in imminent harm, direct imminent harm. I just don't think you can defend that as a publisher.
Another question I want to ask is whether one of the consequences of this election is that it's just going to make hacking so enticing, right? I mean, whoever hacked John Podesta's email has had a profound effect on the potential election of the most powerful person on the planet. You know, the ecosystem that now exists is incredibly rewarding for hackers.
Well, and you know, there's a big archive out there. I think institutions are now going to be tempted to limit their exposure if they feel that they have one, including political operations. And I would imagine that, you know, political communication within campaigns is going to change as a result of what you say. But look, I mean, what is it about these emails that we find sort of sensational apart from whatever public interest disclosures they may contain? It's abusiveness. You know, there's a kind of arrogance and entitlement and stupidity that sometimes these inadvertent disclosures, you know, expose. And we don't want that in our government. So
the polls are very, very close at the moment. But it sounds like what you're saying is that if Hillary Clinton is indeed elected, that she and her government will act better and speak to one another better because they're so aware that all of their emails might well end up on the open internet.
Well, I don't think they will accept that proposition. But I do think that they may use defensible classified systems more effectively than they have in the past. So right. I don't know what it all adds up to in terms of changed conduct. But transparency is generally not a bad thing for human society.
So the ultimate irony is that the final result of this will be Hillary Clinton does more on the classified email server.
Exactly. Yes.
That's Steve Coll of the Journalism School of Columbia University talking with The New Yorker's Nick Thompson.